Well, first of all, thanks to the organizers for inviting me. It's very nice to be here. And I should say that this is based on two works that are joined with Peter Korotiev, Andrei Smirnov, and Anton Zeitlin. Okay, so I'm going to be mostly speaking about quantum key theory of quiver varieties, not quantum integrable systems. I will only mention how these two are connected. So as a motivation, well, I assume that most of you here have probably already seen quantum cohomology of some of any projective variety. So if X is smooth and projective, one can define an upgrade of cohomology, a deformation of it. In the quantum cohomology, the main philosophical reasoning to it, well, maybe not reasoning, but idea is that two classes, instead of just intersecting two classes, we want to understand somehow their more deeper their interactions. So we study curves that pass through both of them, or more than two for that reason. And these curve counting give us a deformation of the classical cohomology ring. So it was. So you can define them for any smooth projective variety, but you can also define them for symplectic resolutions. Namely, Maulik and Okhenkov got a lot of information about that for Nakajima quiver varieties, so which are Nakajima quiver varieties. Which are specific class of symplectic resolutions, maybe most studied and easiest in some way. And they connected quantum cohomology of Nakajima quiver varieties to quantum integrable systems. This actually comes from more classical works in physics, et cetera. So this is sort of the reason why we want to start studying Nakajima quiver varieties, because if we talk about K-theory, so K-theory of X, and from it we want to construct some sort of deformation, the quantum K-theory, well, this has seen different approaches, and they exist now separately, partly connected. So when people say quantum cohomology, I think more or less everybody means the same thing. I think with quantum key theory, that's not the case. And we focus specifically of quantum key theory for Nakajima quiver varieties, basically because we can understand more about it. So a Nakajima quiver variety can be constructed so to construct it, we need a quiver. And two dimension vectors, V and W. I hope that almost everyone has already seen it. So let's say we have some simple quiver with some framing. Let's say the framing is only here, and we can have dimensions here and here. And the Nakajima quiver variety is a Hamiltonian reduction of the space of representations if we double all the edges. And we're going to talk, quantum key theory is constructed only for them. And one of the key features of it, which, for some people it might be not a feature, but rather something bad about them, that quantum key theory depends on the Nakajima quiver variety structure. So it is, you don't have to go deep for examples of two Nakajima quiver varieties that have different quiver data, but are the same geometric varieties. There are many, many different ways, for example, to represent a point as a Nakajima quiver variety, but the main sort of example that would go through today's lecture is the Grassmannian KN. And so the The two different ways of representing it as a Nakajima core variety is saying that this is the same as T star to the Grassmannian of n minus k planes in the n-dimensional space. And for us, these two are different. They give different results. There is some kind of hypothesis of how to connect them, but they're different and, well, yeah, let's for now say only that.
Can I just ask a quick question?
Yep. About that?
So those guys, those are not isomorphic as resolutions of the minimal orbit in type A.
Yeah.
They are not, you're agreeing that they are?
Yeah.
Is the issue just that sort of different Nakajima quiver varieties give you different resolutions, or is there something kind of more serious going on?
I'm not exactly sure.
I think it is more serious because, for instance, if k equal to zero, they would be this isomorphic. But I think the answer is still for quantum multiplication k theory is still different.
Okay.
I think the problems are more serious, and the simplest way to see the difference. I will say more about it later, but it is that in some cases, so if k is less than n over 2, in quantum k theory, the quantum identity is equal to the identity, but in the other case, it is not. The identity element gets deformed. So, and that's pretty significant. They might be still isomorphic as abstract algebras, but there is a natural isomorphism between them as vector spaces, so you would expect the isomorphism of algebras to be the same. That's not happening. All right, so let's focus on this specific case a bit more. So it corresponds to the quiver NK. So we're studying, we have two matrices A and B. You can, BA, no, is equal to zero is the moment map condition. And then there's a stability that B has full rank. This is the stability condition. You can choose the opposite if you want, and that's another thing from how. So if you choose the opposite stability condition, once again the geometric space that you get stays the same, but the quantum K theory is a bit different. For that, we have more of an answer how to connect them. But let's focus on the classical thing. So on this space. There's a torus acting, and this torus is broken up into two. So A plus C star H bar. A is the n-dimensional torus acting on the n space, acting on W. Here the vector space corresponding is V, and here W, and here V. And this thing just scales the fibers of the cotangent bundle. By localization, we know that the localized K theory is generated by fixed points. And the fixed points are classified in this case. So fixed points correspond to k subsets in an n set. So I1, so try k, lying in the set 1, etc. n. So we add an n-dimensional space to have a fixed k-dimensional plane. It has to be generated by k different. K different basis vectors. Okay, so we get that this is n choose k dimensional. And it has been long known that it makes sense to look at all of the Grassmannians together, so it makes sense to take the union of all T star Grassmannians. So we take the K-theory of that, which is nothing but the sum of all of their K-theories separately, and this is 2 to the power n dimensional, because the sum of binomial coefficients is 2 to the power n. And this, on the level of quantum cohomology, nothing would be different at this point. And there has been a long time, well, a pretty old paper of Nekrasov and Shatashvili connecting this to the XXZ module. And actually, I want to show a slide. Thank you. Okay.
You might just need to warm up.
Okay. So there's going to be a slide. It's only the rest of the talk is also going to be Blackboard. There's going to be a table of connecting this language to different other languages that people talk about the same space, which might be familiar, which probably are familiar, some of them too. To the audience. Okay, so here's the table. There are 3 different things that we're talking about. The most important one for this talk is the middle one. So let's say this union of all Grassmannians we call n big N of little n, big N standing for Nakajima. And so the K theory of it is the 2 to the power n dimensional space, and it is it admits a natural action of the quantum group U H bar SL2 hat, and as a module over this quantum group, it is naturally isomorphic to the tensor product of n 2-dimensional tautological modules. This same space is also, so that is also the space of quantum states of the XXZ module. Model and module, I have to be clear about that. Yeah, so the connection between these two has sort of been long known, and it has been conjectured to be connected to it was already on some level known that it's connected to Nakajima quiver varieties. We proved something specific about it. Okay, sorry. While it heats up for some reason. So on the Grassmannian, on the space, there's a very important bundle, sort of the only one important bundle, the tautological bundle V. It's k-dimensional. And tensorial polynomials of it generate everything. So in this space, there are equivariant characters, AIs, which come because we're considering covariant K-theory. They are the same as if you consider the evaluation model there and the evaluation model parameters AI seen over there and the inhomogeneity parameters here. And then you can translate everything else. And so our result is actually this line. So that the generating function for quantum tautological bundles is the same as the Baxter Q operator. So if you have this, well, you can consider them to be, you can consider V being the bundle on the whole thing. So on different levels, you're going to have actually different dimensional bundles. But then you can write out just as a generating function of them. So x to the power. To n. Right? And consider these to be classes, and then you make them into operators by ways of quantum multiplication. And we're saying that the generating function for tautological, actually, you have to say that these are quantum tautological bundles. What are these? I'm going to say later. But these operators exactly coincide with the Baxter Q operators. And it has this, so this connection over here is well, all of this connection is done by Bethe equations. And but the one between the first column and the third one was Barzhganov, Knizhnik, Lukyanov-Zamolodchikov. Yeah.
I see you're referring to the important paper on my question, just as yeah. I was asking it.
Yeah.
It's literally not true that the Baxter Q operator arises from the OR matrix for this guy. You have to have this much more subtle thing.
It's the weighted partial traces of the R matrix.
I know, but it's not literally the OR matrix that you would find in a textbook. It's a much more subtle OR matrix involving the quantum group and some.
Yeah, but it's still, I mean, for us, I mean, that's true, but yeah, thank you. it's still, I mean, the main connection, how we connect these two is through Bethe equations. And so this doesn't matter. And the important part for us, I mean, I think this is sort of significant here, that these operators that we get here are universal elements of this quantum group, which is surprising because it doesn't depend on n, right? For me, that was something that I didn't expect to be true, but I mean, this shows it to be, yeah. Okay, and here, and since, well, I haven't said at all what quantum K-theory is, but it is a deformation of the classical thing with the parameter Z. So, and that parameter Z is the boundary condition in XXZ spin chain, and the parameter of the weight in the trace here. Okay, so this is sort of the motivating part of the talk. And now I'm going to say more about K theory specifically. Okay, so our aim, we need to construct. So, and from now I'm going to go back again to talking just about one Grassmannian instead of talking about all of them at the same time. So let's say we have a K-theory of T star Grassmannian. So we want to construct a deformation. And want a deformation by curve counting. And the way that we go with is by counting quasi-maps. And this is one of the differences with the other approaches seen before, in particular with Giventhal's work, who uses K-theoretic Gromov-Witten invariants. So we want quasi-maps, so let me briefly, well, maybe not define, but at least describe what a quasi-map is for the specific case of the simplest quiver. Of course, you can generalize it to, it's already generalized for any non-conjugate quiver, right? It's actually in the paper of Boom-Seng Kim, sorry, it's alphabetically, Chachan Fontaine. Sorry, I can't. And Maulik is where the most general definition that we're using is given for all GIT quotients. So let's say we want to construct a quasi-map from a curve C, which in our case will always be P1, to our space. So we know that here we have these bundles, V and W. So V is tautological k-dimensional, W is tautological n-dimensional, but also trivial, right? And there is an injection of one into the other. But, if we do have a map, then we could pull back these bundles. and the injection would pull back with them. So this is pullback. And the main idea of the construction of quasi-maps, at least for the Grassmannian, that we don't actually need to say anything about the map. Instead, we would rather give these bundles and the injections. So a quasi-map is the following information. So it's bundle V on P1, k-dimensional, together with a section of the, so together with a section F of the bundle, it's a section of T star HOM from W to V. Okay, so this T star is because we were considering T star there. So actually, I was a bit, I wasn't very careful here. I said just injection. Actually, we have two maps going both ways, which rise naturally from these two maps. So the condition on the section is that the moment map condition it has to satisfy. Yet we don't here. We don't say anything about the stability condition. And that's why it's going to be, well, in this case, it's a partial compactification of the space of maps. I'll erase this. So so F doesn't have to. F is a section, so at each point it could satisfy or not satisfy the stability condition. F doesn't have to satisfy the stability condition everywhere. But for a quasi-map, for a quasi-map to be stable, the condition has to be satisfied almost everywhere. Meaning that there could only be a finite number of places where the section of this bundle goes into the unstable locus, and these points are called singular, so singularities. And that's one of the differences, and I think in this way it's easier than, I mean, at least combinatorially it ends up being easier to study these than rather than stable maps. For this specific reason, because in stable maps, if you had a singularity, you would have to blow up, you would have all these bubbles going into different directions. And here we just say, OK, it's a singularity. That's, so basically, a quasi-map gives you a map from P1 to the Grassmannian. In this case, we only define it for the Grassmannian, but we define everywhere. But with some, so we have these bundles. We have the section, and it might happen. I put it as zero here. It doesn't necessarily have to be zero. It can be just unstable. And here we get a map almost everywhere, except for the singularity. OK. So, for those who know what quantum cohomology is, or at least have some kind of idea, the thing that we need to define an actual deformation from this is to be able to evaluate at some point. And let me just before I go there, the P1 here is fixed. we're counting quasi-maps from a fixed curve. It could be some other curve that is fixed. But for quantum K theory, we only need the genus zero case. And it's not, we're not considering it up to isomorphisms of the P1. P1 is given. And so we want, so let's fix P in P1. So we want an evaluation map. Evaluation P from quasi maps from P1 to two-star Grassmannian from the space to the Grassmannian, right? So we want to be able to say where a specific point goes. So this is not well defined. So not defined. Yet we can fix an open locus where it is. So we can say that we not defined, but on the other hand, we can say that this map does exist for quasi-maps that are non-singular at P. Let me not say where. And so this is a map to T star Grassmannian. And on this open locus, everything's okay. And actually, in some ways, this is already fine, but we can't. So for evaluations, remember to count Gromov-Witten invariants, we wanted push forwards. And this open locus is not, even if we take the invariant part, the fixed locus part of it, if considering with a torus action, this is still not enough. Only if we add another torus acting on the P1, let's not go there yet. So the way to work around this is embed this, is to resolve this map, basically. So there exist these space of quasi maps relative to P for which this evaluation exists. So this is well defined. Oops, sorry. And the construction of relative maps is a bit more complicated, and I will not, I will say probably even less about it than I did here, but let me at least give some idea of how they are constructed. So in the sense, if you define quasi-maps in the same of Shoshan Fontaine, Kim, and Malik, then you can say that the space of relative maps is the compactification of, they define it from all, sort of they do it in the same way that stable maps are defined, that the curve varies. But you can fix the curve that's an open locus in their space and take the compactification of it, and you will get our relative maps, but you can define them separately. The way to do that is, so let's say you had your P1, and here was your point P, and you had your bundle, and it happened so that your section dropped here, it became singular. So what you do is you replace this by a map from another, so this is an extra P1, so you have vector bundles on it. You glue them together here, and you give a section here again, and you evaluate it now at this endpoint. So evaluate here. Okay, so I mean, this construction is somehow very similar to construction of stable maps. Remember, in stable maps, if two points coincided, we would blow up and glue in a P1 here, there. We do the same here. The only difference is, so this P1 is considered up to scaling. So we choose two points on it, the start point and the end point. These are fixed. And otherwise, if two quasi-maps are isomorphic and you scale P1, we consider them to be isomorphic. And this by stability condition, that means that the vector bundles have to have a non-zero degree here. So, and this will prevent us from having infinite chains of these. So evaluate, the key idea is evaluate here. If you can't, Then just repeat again. And this way you will have a chain of P1s all together. And there's another, there's so you will have a map instead of from P1 and a chain of P1s. These are, I draw them like this because they're considered up to scaling. Okunkov calls this thing an accordion, which, I mean, he draws good pictures, so when he draws it, it actually looks like an accordion. So relative quasi-maps give you a way of evaluating things, but they do make things a bit more complicated in the sense that computing stuff is harder, etc. And let me, what should I do next? So next I'll define, using this, we can define quantum tautological classes. So this is something that did not happen at all in the quantum cohomology case. This only happens in the K-theoretic case, and even in the K-theoretic case, this sort of doesn't. These quantum tautological classes often end up being the same as tautological classes, and it is quantum operators of quantum multiplication by them that will end up being the Baxter operator that we that was on the slide. So quantum tautological classes. So if we have quasi-maps of degree d from P1 to T star Grassmannian. I forgot to say what a degree of a quasi-map is. Nobody asked. So let me put it here. So degree of a quasi-map is the degree of V, this vector bundle over here. So this vector bundle has some degree. That's what's called the degree of a quasi-map. So if we have the space of quasi-maps of degree D, there exists, and if we marked a point here, so let's say P lies in P1, these are quasi-maps. They're not relative with respect to P or non-singular or anything, just standard quasi-maps. There exists a vector bundle V V at P. And this is a vector bundle K-dimensional vector bundle on this space. And you can construct it just just fiber-wise. So at each point, so a point in this space is a quasi-map. So if you have a quasi-map, you have a vector bundle on P1, and you choose the fiber at P off that quasi-map. And then you glue them all together to give you a vector bundle on the whole big space. And if you mark different points P, you get different things. We just need one. And so these are elements in K theory classes in K theory of this space quasi-maps of degree D. And then what we do, we will push forward this class to our space to the K theory of the Grassmannian by considering relative at a different point. So let's define the class V of Z. So quantum tautological bundle is defined in the following way. This is evaluation at infinity push forward the variety quasi-maps of degree D relative at infinity. And the class we consider on them is V restricted to 0, this thing over here. And you have to tensor with O virtual hat. So I always, when I talk about this, I never define the virtual fundamental class, and I always just wait till it pops up and I have to say some things about it. And here we take times z to the d. This is just generating parameter. So technically, for this to be an equality, we have to take sum from d equal to 0 to infinity. Okay, so let me just say that O virtual hat is the symmetrized virtual fundamental sheaf, virtual fundamental class. Virtual structure sheaf. Sorry, this is just K theory and cohomology. It's not. There are ways to define it, and it's actually give. It can be constructed also from these bundles and et cetera, but this is not what I want to talk about. This has been. Originally probably this thing without the hat is constructed in Chushan, Fontaine, Kim, and Malik, and then the hat is usually added when anything having to do with Nekrasov comes in. Let's just say it's some class without defining it.
That hat referred to just the square root of the canonical
class. Yeah, that's what the hat. We just shifted by the square root of the canonical bundle. Okay, so this is the quantum tautological bundle. This is just a formal class in K theory, in quantum K theory. So V hat of Z lies in quantum K theory. It's a covariant, of course, of T star Grassmannian.
And if regularizing quantum K theory means actually it's usual K theory, just tensor.
It's usual K theory, but with an extra parameter z. That's what quantum K theory is. Okay, and together with this class, we can of course construct any tensorial polynomial. So let's say lambda L of V hat of z is defined analogously. Okay, and it is exactly the only thing you have to change is take the wedge power here. So there's nothing.
Particularly if you take L equal to 0, you get the quantum unit, right?
That's exactly correct. So for L equal to 0, you get the quantum identity, quantum unit. So that's also a class. I mean, if you put in 1, it's still a push forward, and it still can be. Nothing promises us that it's going to be 1. Actually, if k is less than n over 2, it does happen to be 1. But especially considering that we're looking at all of the Grassmannians together, I mean, we're not going to run away from that, from this deformation. So I've defined quantum tautological classes, and it's time to actually define quantum K theory, meaning elements of quantum multiplication. Meaning operators of quantum multiplication. So let's say we want to construct, but to do that, sorry, first we're going to define G, the gluing matrix. So the gluing matrix is the following thing. So let's say we take O. Yeah. We take maps relative at zero and maps relative at zero and infinity, relative at both of them. So we can now push forward in two different points and get two different things. So this is maybe it's worth mentioning that there's a picture notation. So this is a non-singular point, and this is a relative point. And this is a marked point. The marked point doesn't change anything about the space that you're considering. It's just marked. Okay, so now from this picture over here actually denotes a specific space of quasi-maps. And from that, on that space, we can take the virtual structure sheaf. And we can push it forward at zero and at infinity, get two different things. That gives us an element of the tensor square of K theory. And we can construct an operator. Let me write out what the operator is. So G is equal to the following thing. So evaluation at zero infinity push forward from quasi maps of degree D. So this is sum from D equals zero to infinity. Quasi maps of degree D is relative at zero and infinity. The class virtual structure sheaf. So, and this technically is not an operator, it's a pair of classes. So this is made into an operator. By the symmetrized classical bilinear form. So on K theory, there exists a bilinear with a classical pairing. Just take the Euler characteristic of the tensor product of two elements. And this is the symmetrized version, so we also multiply by the square root of the canonical. Okay, so this is an operator. This is the gluing operator. Let me not say anything about why we define it at all. Let me straight away go to defining quantum K theoretical multiplication. We have everything though. That we'll need for the construction. So if you have the element F in K theory of two-star Grassmannian, then let's define the operator F of multiplying by F by the following thing. So this is the sum from D equals zero to infinity. Evaluation push forward at P1 and P3. So now we're gonna be marking three points. Let me draw this here. We're gonna be marking three points, P1, P2, P3. So the space considered is quasi-maps of degree D relative at P1, P2, P3. And the sheaf that we're pushing forward is the following. It's the evaluation pullback at P2 of the sheaf G inverse times F. That times the virtual structure sheaf. So, and then once again times G inverse. Wait, let me slowly go through what actually is going on here. First of all, the same thing can be said about this thing. So we take a class F in the K theory of the Grassmannian. We multiply
the d, presumably times z to the d, right?
Z to the d. Yeah, and you could put it here or here. It's not going to matter. So we take a class f in the K-theory of our Grassmannian. We shift it by the gluing operator, by the inverse of the gluing operator, by some operator that we chose before. We lift it up by evaluation of P2. We pull it up to this space. And then we multiply it by the virtual structure sheaf, and we push it forward in two different ways. And from that, we construct an operator when we push it forward in two different ways, that gives us an element of the tensor square. And then we make it into an operator acting from the second copy to the first by the bilinear form. And then in the end, the operator that we got, we have to shift again by G inverse. So, well, this is, so in pictures, this would look something like this. So take G inverse F, it put it here, get an operator, multiply by G inverse. So this is even the sentence is way too long to actually be understandable. The idea is the same as, so the idea, same as quantum cohomology, count three-point invariants. So here we have three marked points. What all this long thing actually means exactly the same as you would do for Gromov-Winn theory. The minor changes are that now instead of three marked points, you have three relative points. And there's also that, well, a bit annoying G inverse thing. But it's actually a shift. You see, we do it in the beginning. And in the end, it's for, well, for some reasons, we added it. OK.
Is it easy to explain what you need it for?
Well, to make these operators commutative, for example. So. What this there is a, I mean, this there's going to be hand waving right now. I'm not. So this G inverse actually allows us to glue together things. So if we have something computed on one curve, something computed on the other curve with relative ends, and we put the G inverse in there, we can get something computed on the. If you would just glue them instead of taking relative conditions, and I mean this is not. I mean, one would have to define this because we have not defined quasimaps from a nodal curve, right? And actually, to define quasimaps from a nodal curve, you would have to embed the accordion in between them. And the whole reasoning for this G inverse to be there is that, I mean, technically, you could see that, okay, let's look at these curves separately, and both of them have the accordion. But actually, this way, we'll be counting the accordion twice. And to get rid of it, we have to multiply by G inverse. This is some reasoning. And there is a, I mean, this G inverse allows us to give this sort of picture proofs that can be actually translated into accurate mathematical language of, for example, commutativity. So let's say, well, no, technically, this is associativity. So we want to show that two different operators of quantum multiplication by two different elements commute with each other. In the language of the ring, this actually will mean associativity together with, I mean, commutativity in this case is a bit, well, it's more obvious. So the way to do that is, OK, we have these two things. We multiply them together. Let's say here we're multiplying by F1. Here we're multiplying by F2. Then we can actually glue them, and this becomes a four-point invariant. And these two, I mean, if you switch places, this can be deformed into the same thing. This ends up being the same thing. So this is the only reason why we actually need, well, and to make multiplication by quantum topological classes easier. as well. Yeah, so by the way, you could have, I mean, I introduced the picture notation after I introduced the quantum tautological classes. You can, quantum tautological classes have sort of a nice view in the picture notation. Here you just embed V or, well, some lambda L. So in here, when I put it here, it means that it's actually the bundle at that point at zero. And this is the quantum tautological class. Yeah.
You remind me quickly, this formula, which ingredients depend on the variety and which ones on the Nakajima quiver presentation?
This formula?
Yes.
I mean, the whole the definition of quasi-maps. Quasi-maps really rely on the Nakajima quiver variety structure. And we can't get it out of it.
For speaking, to talk about quasi-maps, what you need is you need to realize your variety is an open subset in the stack. Every time you can do that, you can talk about quasi-maps.
Yeah.
So
and there are different.
If you write it as a quotient, some kind of quotient in the sense of you know taking stable points and so on, then somehow if you sort of meet the stability condition, then it gives you an embedding of the variety into a stack, and that's kind of what's used here.
I mean, physically, the statement I understand is the fact that they're talking about three-dimensional quantum gauge theories.
Yeah.
Two-dimensional gauge theories. And in three-dimensional gauge theories, I cannot replace the gauge theory with a sigma model, but
it. Well, that's. I don't really. Well, that's what my co-authors say is what my physicist co-authors say is what's going on. But I don't. I'm not a good person to talk about that part. Yeah. But yeah. Okay. So. Okay. We define quantum K theory and quantum tautological classes, and. So let's let me erase something. Sorry. Okay. So now I want to somehow a little bit go back to the classical theory, and if you just care, well, so we have classical K theory, equivariant K theory of our space. Oh, maybe it's worth mentioning. So quasi-maps, quantum K theory, quantum tautological classes can be defined for all Nakajima varieties. We have specific computations. Showing that they're the same as a Baxter operator for all type A varieties. Originally it was also only for the Grassmannian, and for specifically the Grassmannian, we have more specific formulas that we don't have for the type A class. For all partial flags, this is all of the said can be very easily generalized. Okay, so let's say there's classical K theory. And there's quantum K theory. Okay, so what are some crucial elements of classical K theory? There are fixed points. And fixed points give you an eigenbasis. Of classical K theory, then there are tautological bundle. There's a tautological bundle and wedge powers of the tautological bundles, and importantly there are equivariant characters AIs. Let me write it down maybe here. So symmetric, so eigenvalues of tautological classes are symmetric polynomials. In AI. All right, so we want to construct There's a natural deformation of all of these here. So this thing is harder, and it's actually what the work of course, they do it in full generality, the work of Aganajic and Okuinkov does. So I think, to remember the off-shell Bethe-Jansas, Bethe eigenfunctions, it's their latest paper. So these are naturally deformed in quantum tautological classes. And now, these are naturally deformed into Bethe roots. So here we had tautological classes. Eigenvalues are symmetric polynomials of equivariant characters. Here we have quantum tautological classes, eigenvalues, symmetric functions of Bethe roots. So the thing is that, I mean, well, symmetric functions, they stay symmetric functions. I mean, otherwise, this would be sort of obvious. I mean, otherwise, you could say, OK, there's some deformation. It deforms everything. But here, the surprising fact is that these things do not get deformed. So we can just deform the values at which they are taken rather than them. Oops. Again, third time. Okay, so let me write out the formula for what. At least for the Grassmannian, this is easy. For flags, it's going to be a bit more complicated. And I'm not going to write it down because it's just too big. So these lambda I's are solutions of Bethe ansatz. So it has the following form. So J not equal to I, lambda I minus lambda J h bar divided by s I h bar minus s j times the product s I minus a j divided, it's lambdas. I mix up lambdas and s a j h bar minus lambda I equal to z times h bar to minus n over 2. So when I goes from 1 to k. And you do need some kind of, well, to make this look like the classical Bethe equation, you need some kind of change of coordinates, but it's fairly clear how it goes. These are equations on these lambda I's and lambda j's. And you can, well, the first thing that I want to say about them is that if z equals 0, then lambda I's equals lambda I's. I mean, you can mix them up and stuff, but they still have to be, that's the only thing that can happen. And that's good, because z equals to 0 is supposed to be the classical case. And
yeah. Should just come in about what the statement is. So you're saying that a I's go to lambda I's. That,
yeah.
What does that mean?
So the real statement here is that eigenvalues of quantum tautological classes are symmetric functions of Bethe roots.
Of lambda i's.
Yeah. So eigenvalues of quantum tautological classes are symmetric functions, corresponding symmetric functions of lambda i's. Yeah. So, okay, so I can pause. Let's pause now for questions and to give an opportunity to go to the colloquium talk if somebody is willing. And I'll continue. And maybe less formally and more questions. And yeah, there are some other things that I would say.
I got a meeting, actually.
So. Yeah, that's it.
Should we thank the speaker?
Oh. Okay, so I mean, this is more hand waving. So for other quiver varieties, there is a. So. What, so let's talk more. I'm not going to say much. There's so more generally. So in type A, we can actually there. There are also Bethe equations. They become bigger and bigger. There are more and more. There are more parameters. Let's say. You have several vertices. You have like k1, k2, k3. So for each of them separately, you're going to have ki separate parameters and separate families of equations. Then they're going to interact. So I mean, you can open our paper. It takes up like a whole page to write it out. So I'm not sure how much you can get out of just looking at it. But more importantly, let's say that so. So the quantum there are several quantum parameters. One per each non-framed vertex of the quiver. Which is reasonable for flags as well, right? Because the even if you would count quantum cohomology, it's actually generated by H2, and H2 corresponds to line bundles that correspond to different vertices. For each vertex, you can construct a separate line bundle. But otherwise, the whole construction quasi-maps are the same, relative, non-relative, everything works. Just computations get very hard.
What's the quantum groove interpretation?
For type A, I mean, of course, it's just SLN. Generally, I don't know. I mean, for type A, everything is just computed.
Right, but if you take the K theorem of quiver variety,
yeah,
this has an action of the corresponding quantum affine algebra.
Yeah.
Or else know which module it gets, and know which one is. It's not going to have a stance product position though, so it's not sort of to be.
We haven't done any computations, so I'm like I in this sense. I mean, all the results that the only things that I say they actually come from computing things. So I can't like I'm not. Ready to make good predictions before I computed anything for specific cases. But generally, it should be possible to do. There's nothing really standing in the way. I'm just not sure of how to. So for example, for the Grassmannian, in this case of the Grassmannian, we do have a formula for, so for Grassmannian, sorry. We have the formula presenting this operator for any which power as so we take the classical thing So this is quantum multiplication by the quantum tautological class. We take the classical thing, and then plus, I mean, z times e0 l minus 1 v f minus 1. And you can go, et cetera. And there's actually, I mean, z, and there's a rational function. There's a rational function over there. And this formula, it's surprising, and it's cool that we have it. I have no way of generalizing it even to SLN. It might be fairly straightforward, but it's but complicated combinatorially. So this, is it clear how this formula goes? I mean, this is just z, then you're going to have z squared times some other rational function times e0 squared l minus 2 of v f minus 1 squared. So you go to different levels of the Grassmannian. And yeah. OK, so and.
And so you mentioned that this quantum union stays a quantum union for Grassmannian if k is less than n over 2.
Yeah. So
can I say what is the generalization of the statement for the group? So in principle, if we were to, this V and W define you a dominant weight for the Grassmannian algebra and some other way. So is the condition that this other weight is also dominant? Would that be the right condition?
I think it is. Yeah. It just, I mean, this is they're the best, this is by Okrenkov in his lecture notes in enumerative K-theory he has. It's called large framing vanishing. So, yeah. So for any Nakajima quiver variety, if the framing is big, it's always, I mean, big meaning what you said, then the quantum identity will stay the quantum identity and quantum tautological classes will stay tautological classes.
Yeah, quantum tautological classes also stay quantum tautological.
I knew the answer at some point. There might be, maybe the condition is a bit stronger for all.
Grassmannian, is that the condition?
For Grassmannian, it is, yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah. I don't know, we can finish if there, I mean, there's the whole quantum difference equation business. Not sure if anyone is. Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly used in this work, and it's important to the subject, but whatever, another time.
Maybe you can just say, is that somehow appearing in relation to this quantum loop algebra action, or?
Not really. So let me say, it's going to take 3 minutes. So you can say, I defined quantum tautological classes. You can define the same thing. So, but you add an extra torus action here, Q. So you also here you can have some. This is called a descendant in this case. But you can have this extra torus action Q and push it forward, and the thing that you get is called a capped vertex with descendant. I mean, let's call this tau with descendant tau. But the thing is, now you can do the same thing if you have this extra parameter Q. You can do this even with a non-singular condition. So I said that non-singular condition is bad because the maps are not proper. But if you have this extra parameter Q, then on the fixed locus they are. So this makes things better. So there's a this is called a bare vertex. So it's not relative here. And this thing they both depend on Q. But this thing sort of drastically depends on Q, because here you could take the limit as Q tends to 1 and you would get our quantum tautological class. But you could just turn this turn off the torus action. And here, if you turn it off, you're going to get a singularity. That's bad. But these two, there's an operator, the capping operator, phi, and it could also be defined enumeratively. So you just have to do this. You take two marked points. You take 2 points. One of them non-singular. The other one relative, and then you make it an operator like we always did before. And this capping operator, it's also. I mean, this is the generalization of the J function, and it's just a generating function for all these invariants, this operator satisfies the quantum difference equation. So psi qz equals m of z psi of z.
Where m is something explicit.
M is something explicit, we can say that m is a quantum multiplication. In our definition, it's quantum multiplication by quantum tautological line bundle. Yeah. And this it also has, it has an identification through the dynamical Weyl group, and this is the work of Smirnov and Okunkov. They have this paper where they talk, it's proven about the quantum difference equation. That operator is specifically computed and shown how it's connected to everything else.
Yeah. There's also one in the A's, right?
What?
There also was for the A's. For shifting the A's.
Yeah. I'm actually not sure.
Yeah. Your symmetry exchange is A's and dots.
Well, yeah, that's a symplectic duality, but I mean, I know.
This Q, this psi is a function of Z and L and A's, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there is, so that is, haven't done, I don't know it very well. I'm not sure how explicitly is this symplectic duality actually constructed. I know that Dmitry Korb computed some specific examples for the Grassmannian and the slice of the affine Grassmannian. You can just show that the vertex, if you switch coordinates, it actually becomes the same thing. But I think mathematically, there's a lot of questions there.
So here you have a combinatorial interpretation for this M.
Yeah.
But not for the things that would appear in shifting the A's. That's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so.
I also have a question. So in your paper, I have a conjecture that as an abstract algebra, this thing is independent of the choice of this quantum gate theory is independent of the choice.
We don't have as a conjecture in our paper, I think.
Okay,
but
question number one: is it true for Grassmannian system?
I have even for the Grassmannian as an abstract algebra, I'm not exactly sure. There's yeah.
So if you change k to n minus k, but do you believe that?
So there is one thing that I can say. There are different ways of changing from k to n minus k. So if you change it in the vertex, I don't really know, but you can change the stability condition to the opposite one, which in some ways is the. So let's, yeah. So if you have a vertex, you can switch the stability condition.
Which in this case it just means that there's enough injective maps against the surjective maps, right?
Yeah. So in this specific case it's easy, but this you get a flop, which geometrically is the same thing. Geometrically, we still have the Grassmannian. So, but you can, this construction, you can the flop, you can do for any Nakajima Kuiper varieties. And the idea is that if you have quantum K theory of X, and this is at with the quantum parameter Z, so this is isomorphic to the quantum K theory off, well, let's this is the flop with parameters the inverse, so that all powers of quasi-maps, they actually become negative. I haven't actually said anything about why the powers are only positive. It's something to do with stability conditions, et cetera. But if you switch the stability condition, they all become negative. You have to do that carefully. It's part of an upcoming work, work in progress. Yeah.
But for the psi, will be. So the psi is a power theory in.
Yeah, in Z. I mean, yeah, it would just be. I mean, this is not a very interesting change. I mean, this just changing Z to Z inverse is basically, you have the exact. There's an isomorphism between the space of quasi maps. It's not just like. For symplectic duality, at least, I don't know why exactly it's true. I've seen like computationally that you get the same things, but the spaces of quasimaps are not identified. Not that I know of. So this is a more mysterious area. But it's actually, yeah. I mean, yeah, there are a lot of people doing different things, but I think specific computations are very interesting for beginning.
So you're saying the quasi-maps are defined also when you don't have a Porsche, or general.
Well, but I mean, okay, quasi-maps are defined only in context, and we have a variety which is embedded as an open subset into a stack.
So, for example, can you do quasi-maps in the Coulomb branch?
No, because I mean, you need this additional structure, and so this additional structure.
It has to be.
Yes, you have to be given this embedding, this open embedding of this variety into a stack.
And it depends on it.
So typical change when this arises is when you have a variety which is defined by some kind of JT quotient, which means that somehow we have some bigger variety in which the group acts, and then your variety is defined the following way. It defines some kind of space of stable points, and then you on which the group acts freely, and then somehow you take the quotient. But then if you take the whole thing, then somehow you take the corresponding stake quotient, then it contains this other thing as an open subset. And I think that's kind of typical. So I mean, and there are various contexts in which you can talk about quasi maps. So for instance, another way you can talk about quasi maps is suppose you have a projective variety, which is embedded, with a kind of fixed embedding in projective space. Then you can also talk about quasi maps because somehow. So you can realize, I mean, if you have a variety embedded in projective space, you can take projective colon over it. And you have an action of C star on this projective colon, which is free almost everywhere except just one point. But if you take the stake quotient of the whole colon, then it contains your projective variety as an open subset that we can talk about. So that's kind of, but.
So the quantum theory does not require a particular.
No, I mean, quantum key theory in their definition does require it. So their definition of quantum key theory uses the structure. They somehow saying that just defining for queer varieties, they're saying somehow you have to remember how you present it as a queer variety, which in particular says that somehow, I mean, writing a particular variety as a queer variety, I mean, writing as a Hamiltonian reduction in particular gives you the structure.
But the fact it doesn't, any comfort theory, you could have taken any other portion, not a simple portion, but
I don't know. It's not a question to me. I think they are only doing queer varieties, which means that it's quotient by product of G lengths, right? I mean, but in theory,
but it's a symplectic quotient. You both impose moment maps and you do that.
Yeah, no, but
quotient.
The moment map is something. Right. But you see, just okay, no, but the moment map is.
You could have done more general things. Sorry.
I mean, for more generic JIT quotients, I would just my first question would be how, like, is it meaningful at all? Like, you can construct quasi maps and there is a virtual structure sheaf, but how meaningful the resulting object is, and like it can change very drastically depending on your presentation and all that.
The problem is that neither somehow. I mean, okay, so when you're taking this kind of symplectic quotient, then somehow you take it. Different senses. You can take it in the sense of just the five varieties, then it gets something. I mean, also for queer varieties, queer varieties usually kind of a diagram. If I have some kind of single five variety, I have its resolution. So here, you know, for this to work, you actually need the resolution. I mean,
okay, but
so and this is actually rare. So somehow it's, I mean, so I mean, it means that you want to be able to define some kind of set of stable points on which the action is free, and it doesn't happen very often that you can actually do that.
I mean, if you happen to want to do CP1 instead of establish CP1, the technology would still work, right?
Yeah. For well, I mean, we have in our.
You don't need simplectic, right?
Yeah, I mean, we actually even in our second paper we have like we construct the classical limits, the compact limit, like, and we connect it to the TRS model. I mean, that's mostly thanks to Peter Karatev. So the, like all of this can yeah. But it's unclear. I mean, for me, it's unclear. So for the classical case, there are these works of, and Giventhal has like this whole industry, which is mostly him, that who like a lot of papers about quantum key theory. And with that, like the ground for, we don't have a connection with that even. So I think like if we something like that would be true, which I doubt it is because of the quantum identity issue and stuff like that, then I, there would be a reason to do this. But otherwise, I mean, this just like you present it differently and you get a completely different result. I think that's for Nakajima Kurva,
I used the. I felt that for flag writers of Taipei, you can actually produce the result.
We can produce, I mean, we can produce the result given Tal and YP Lee that they get by drift quasi maps. It is also, they're not doing ground foot theory there.
But you can also prove that it's the same in that case. I mean, this is absolutely rigorous statement.
But. Yeah, for flag varieties, yes, but I'm not really sure how far that can go.
So, we can do quantum cohomology, not quantum key theory.
Yes.
Can you do with the quasi maps?
Well, I mean, in some cases, I mean, I don't know actually. With these quasi maps, I didn't try, actually, I don't know.
We originally had a computation for quantum cohomology doing quasi maps, and we do get the XXX model, for example. Like we do get what is.
No, but the question for quantum cohomology, you have the kind of traditional definition of quantum cohomology.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's.
Is it true that here always you're going to get the same as that one? If you do cohomology.
It might be different by wall crossing.
Yeah, I mean,
but on the nose, do you get the same multiplication operators or not?
I don't
know.
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, it's on, more honest answer would be I don't know, but it's yeah.
I think physically it should be the equivalent between the calculation in sigma model and the calculation in HD. In calculations in sigma model would be the usual cohomology, and then calculations in HD would be the quasi-maps.
So physically. Is it